"They'll make it yet. They'll escape," thought Pippin. And then he managed to twist his neck so as to glance back with one eye over his shoulder. He saw that riders away eastward were already level with the orcs, galloping over the plain. The sunset gilded their spears and helmets, and glinted in their pale, flowing hair. They were hemming the orcs in, preventing them from scattering, and driving them along over the line of the river. He wondered very much what kind of folk they were. He wished now that he had learned more in Rivendell, and looked more at maps and things. But in those days the plans for the journey seemed to be in more competent hands, and he'd never reckoned with being cut off from Gandalf or from Strider, and even from Frodo. All that he could remember about Rohan was that Gandalf's horse, Shadowfax, had come from that land. That sounded hopeful as far as it went. "But how will they know that we're not orcs?" he thought. "I don't suppose they've ever heard of hobbits down here. I suppose I ought to be glad that the beastly orcs look like being destroyed, but I'd rather be saved myself." The chances were that he and Merry would be killed together with their captors before even the men of Rohan were aware of them. A few of the riders appeared to be bowmen, skilled at shooting from a running horse. Riding swiftly into range, they shot arrows at the orcs that straggled behind, and several of them fell. Then the riders wheeled away out of the range of the answering bows of their enemies, who shot wildly, not daring to talk. This happened many times, and on one occasion arrows fell among the Isengarders. One of them, just in front of Pippin, stumbled and did not get up again. Night came down without the riders closing in for battle. Many orcs had fallen, but fully 200 remained. In the early darkness, the orcs came to a hillock. The eaves of the forest were very near, probably no more than 3 furlongs away, but they could go no further. The horsemen had encircled them. A small band disobeyed Ugluk's command and ran on towards the forest. Only 3 returned.
"Well, here we are," sneered Grishnak. "Fine leadership. I hope the great Ugluk will lead us out again."
"Put those halflings down," ordered Ugluk, taking no notice of Grishnak. "You, Lugdush, get 2 others and stand guard over them. They're not to be killed unless the filthy whiteskins break through, understand? As long as I'm alive, I want them. But they're not to cry out, and they're not to be rescued. Find their legs."
The last part of the order was carried out mercilessly, but Pippin found that for the first time he was close to Merry. The orcs were making a great deal of noise, shouting and clashing their weapons, and the hobbits managed to whisper together for a while.
"I don't think much of this," said Merry. "I feel nearly done in. Don't think I could crawl away far, even if I was free."
"Lembas," whispered Pippin. "Lembas, I've got some. Have you? I don't think they've taken anything but our swords."
"Yes, I had a packet in my pocket," answered Merry. "But it must be better to crumbs. Anyway, I can't put my mouth in my pocket."
"You won't have to, I've..."
But just then a savage kick warned Pippin that the noise had died down, and the guards were watchful. The night was dark and cold. All round the knoll on which the orcs were gathered, little watchfires sprang up, gold and red in the darkness, a complete ring of them. They were within a long bowshot, but the riders didn't show themselves against the light, and the orcs wasted many arrows shooting at the fires until Ugluk stopped them. The riders made no sound. Later in the night, when the moon came out of the mist, then occasionally they could be seen, shadowy shapes that glinted now and again in the white light as they moved in ceaseless patrol.
"They'll wait for the sun, curse them," growled one of the guards. "Why don't we get together and charge through? What's old Ugluk think he's doing, I should like to know?" "I dare say you would," snarled Ugluk, stepping up from behind. "Meaning, I don't think at all, eh? Curse you! You're as bad as the other rebel, the maggots and the apes of Lugmoors. No good trying to charge with them. They just squeal and bolt.
and there are more than enough of these filthy horse boys to mop up our lot on the flat. There's only one thing those maggots can do. They can see like gimlets in the dark. But these white skins have better night eyes than most men, from all I've heard. And don't forget their horses. They can see the night breeze, or so it's said. Still, there's one thing the fine fellows don't know. Mahor and his lads are in the forest, and they should turn up any time now. Ogluk's words were enough, apparently, to satisfy the Isengarders, but the other orcs were both dispirited and rebellious. They posted a few watchers, but most of them lay on the ground, resting in the pleasant darkness. It did indeed become very dark again, for the moon passed westward into thick cloud, and Pippin could not see anything a few feet away. The fires brought no light to the hillock. The riders were not, however, content merely to wait for the dawn and let their enemies rest. A sudden outcry on the east side of the knoll showed that something was wrong. It seemed that some of the men had ridden in close, slipped off their horses, crawled to the edge of the camp, and killed several orcs, and then had faded away again. Ogluk dashed off to stop a stampede. Pippin and Merry sat up. Their guards, Isengarders, had gone with Ogluk. But if the hobbits had any thought of escape, it was soon dashed. A long, hairy arm took each of them by the neck and drew them close together. Dimly they were aware of Grishnak's great head and hideous face between them. His foul breath was on their cheeks. He began to paw them and feel them. Pippin shuddered as hard, cold fingers groped down his back.
"Well, my little ones," said Grishnak in a soft whisper, "enjoying a nice rest or not? A little awkwardly placed, perhaps. Swords and whips on one side and nasty spears on the other. Little people shouldn't meddle in affairs that are too big for them." His fingers continued to grope. There was a light like a pale but hot fire behind his eyes. The thought came suddenly into Pippin's mind, as if caught direct from the urgent thought of his enemy.
"Grishnak knows about the ring. He's looking for it, while Ogluk is busy. He probably wants it for himself."
Cold fear was in Pippin's heart, yet at the same time he was wondering what use he could make of Grishnak's desire.
"I don't think you'll find it that way," he whispered. "It isn't easy to find."
"Find it?" said Grishnak. His fingers stopped crawling and gripped Pippin's shoulder. "Find what? What are you talking about, little one?"
For a moment Pippin was silent. Then suddenly in the darkness he made a noise in his throat.
"Gollum, Gollum."
"Nothing, my precious," he added.
The hobbits felt Grishnak's fingers twitch.
"Oh, oh," hissed the goblin softly. "That's what he means, is it? Oh, oh, very, very dangerous, my little ones."
"Perhaps," said Merry, now alert and aware of Pippin's guess. "Perhaps, and not only for us. Still, you know your business best. Do you want it or not? And what would you give for it?"
"Do I want it? Do I want it?" said Grishnak, as if puzzled, but his arms were trembling. "What would I give for it? What do you mean?"
"We mean," said Pippin, choosing his words carefully, "that it's no good groping in the dark. We could save you time and trouble. But you must untie our legs first, or we'll do nothing and say nothing."
"My dear, tender little fools," hissed Grishnak. "Everything you have and everything you know will be got out of you in due time. Everything. You'll wish there was more than you could tell to satisfy the questioner. Indeed you will, quite soon. We shan't hurry the inquiry. Oh, dear, no. What do you think you've been kept alive for? My dear little fellows, please believe me when I say that it wasn't out of kindness. That's not even one of Ogluk's faults."
"I find it quite easy to believe," said Merry. "But you haven't got your prey home yet, and it doesn't seem to be going your way, whatever happens.
If we come to Isengard, it won't be the great Grishnak that benefits. Saruman will take all that he can find. If you want anything for yourself, now's the time to do a deal.
Grishnak began to lose his temper. The name of Saruman seemed specially to enrage him. Time was passing, and the disturbance was dying down. Ugluk or the Isengarders might return at any minute.
"Have you got it, either of you?"
he snarled.
"Gollum, Gollum," said Pippin.
"Untie our legs," said Merry. They felt the orc's arms trembling violently.
"Curse you, you filthy little vermin," he hissed. "Untie your legs. I'll untie every string in your bodies. Do you think I can't search you to the bones? Search you? I'll cut you both to quivering shreds. I don't need the help of your legs to get you away and have you all to myself."
Suddenly he seized them. The strength in his long arms and shoulders was terrifying. He tucked them one under each armpit and crushed them fiercely to his sides. A great stifling hand was clapped over each of their mouths. Then he sprang forward, stooping low. Quickly and silently he went, until he came to the edge of the knoll. There, choosing a gap between the watchers, he passed like an evil shadow out into the night, down the slope and away westward towards the river that flowed out of the forest. In that direction there was a wide open space with only one fire. After going a dozen yards he halted, peering and listening. Nothing could be seen or heard. He crept slowly on, bent almost double. Then he squatted and listened again. Then he stood up, as if to risk a sudden dash. At that very moment the dark form of a rider loomed up right in front of him. A horse snorted and reared. A man called out. Grishnak flung himself on the ground flat, dragging the hobbits under him. Then he drew his sword. No doubt he meant to kill his captives, rather than allow them to escape or to be rescued. But it was his undoing. The sword rang faintly, and glinted a little in the light of the fire away to his left. An arrow came whistling out of the gloom. It was aimed with skill, or guided by fate, and it pierced his right hand. He dropped the sword and shrieked. There was a quick beat of hoofs, and even as Grishnak leapt up and ran, he was ridden down, and a spear passed through him. He gave a hideous shivering cry and lay still. The hobbits remained flat on the ground, as Grishnak had left them. Another horseman came riding swiftly to his comrade's aid. Whether because of some special keenness of sight, or because of some other sense, the horse lifted and sprang lightly over them, but its rider did not see them, lying covered in their elven cloaks, too crushed for the moment, and too afraid to move. At last Merry stirred and whispered softly, "So far so good. But how are we to avoid being spitted?" The answer came almost immediately. The cries of Grishnak had roused the orcs. From the yells and screeches that came from the knoll, the hobbits guessed that their disappearance had been discovered. Ugluk was probably knocking off a few more heads. Then suddenly the answering cries of orc voices came from the right, outside the circle of watchfires, from the direction of the forest and the mountains. Mahur had apparently arrived and was attacking the besiegers. There was the sound of galloping horses. The riders were drawing in their ring close round the knoll, risking the orc arrows so as to prevent any sortie, while a company rode off to deal with the newcomers. Suddenly Merry and Pippin realized that without moving they were now outside the circle. There was nothing between them and escape.
"Now," said Merry, "if only we had our legs and hands free, we might get away. But I can't touch the knots, and I can't bite them."
"No need to try," said Pippin. "I was going to tell you. I've managed to free my hands. These loops are only left for show. You'd better have a bit of Lembas first."
He slipped the cords off his wrists and fished out a packet. The cakes were broken, but good, still in their leaf wrappings. The hobbits each ate two or three pieces. The taste brought back to them the memory of fair faces and laughter and wholesome food in quiet days now far away. For a while they ate thoughtfully, sitting in the dark, heedless of the cries and sounds of battle nearby. Pippin was the first to come back to the present. "We must be off," he said. "Half a moment." Grishnak's sword was lying close at hand, but it was too heavy and clumsy for him to use, so he crawled forward, and finding the body of the goblin, he drew from its sheath a long, sharp knife. With this he quickly cut their bonds. "Now for it," he said. "When we've warmed up a bit, better we shall be able to stand again and walk. But in any case, we'd better start by crawling." They crawled. The turf was deep and yielding, and that helped them, but it seemed a long, slow business. They gave the watchfire a wide berth and wormed their way forward bit by bit until they came to the edge of the river, gurgling away in the black shadows under its deep banks. Then they looked about. The sounds had died away. Evidently, Mohor and his lads had been killed or driven off. The riders had returned to their silent, ominous vigil. It wouldn't last very much longer. Already the night was old. In the east, which had remained unclouded, the sky was beginning to grow pale. "We must get under cover," said Pippin, "or we shall be seen." "It'll not be any comfort to us if these riders discover that we're not orcs after we're dead." He got up and stamped his feet. "Those cords have cut me like wires, but my feet are getting warm again. I could stagger on now. What about you, Merry?" Merry got up. "Yes," he said, "I can manage it. Lembas does put heart into you, a more wholesome sort of feeling, too, than the heat of the orc draught. I wonder what it was made of. Better not to know, I expect. Let's get a drink of water to wash away the thought of it." "Not here. The banks are too steep," said Pippin. "Forward now." They turned and walked side by side slowly along the line of the river. Behind them the light grew in the east. As they walked, they compared notes, talking lightly in hobbit fashion of the things that had happened since their capture. No listener would have guessed from their words that they had suffered cruelly and been in dire peril, going without hope towards torment and death, or that even now, as they well knew, they had little chance of ever finding friend or safety again. "You seem to have been doing well, Master Took," said Merry. "You will get almost a chapter in old Bilbo's book, if ever I get a chance to report to him. Good work, especially guessing that hairy villain's little game, and playing up to him. But I wonder if anyone will ever pick up your trail and find that brooch. I should hate to lose mine, but I'm afraid yours has gone for good." "I shall have to brush up my toes if I'm to get level with you. Indeed, Cousin Brandybuck is going in front now. This is where he comes in. I don't suppose you've much notion where we are, but I spent my time at Rivendell rather better. We're walking west along the Entwash. The butt end of the mountains is in front, and Fangorn Forest." Even as he spoke, the dark edge of the forest loomed up straight before them. Night seemed to have taken refuge under its great trees, creeping away from the coming dawn. "Lead on, Master Brandybuck," said Pippin, "or lead back. We have been warned against Fangorn, but one so knowing will not have forgotten that." "I haven't," answered Merry, "but the forest seems better to me all the same than turning back into the middle of a battle." He led the way in under the huge branches of the trees. Old beyond guessing, they seemed. Great trailing beards of lichen hung from them, blowing and swaying in the breeze. Out of the shadows the hobbits peeped, gazing back down the slope. Little furtive figures that in the dim light looked like elf children in the deeps of time, peering out of the wild wood in wonder at their first dawn. Far over the great river and the brown lands, leagues upon grey leagues away, the dawn came, red as flame. Loud rang the hunting horns to greet it. The riders of Rohan sprang suddenly to life. Horn answered horn again. Merry and Pippin heard, clear in the cold air, the neighing of war horses and the sudden singing of many men. The sun's limb was lifted, an arc of fire above the margin of the world. Then with a great cry the riders charged from the east. The red light gleamed on mail and spear. The orcs yelled and shot all the arrows that remained to them. The hobbits saw several horsemen fall, but their line held on up the hill and over it, and wheeled round and charged again. Most of the raiders that were left alive then broke and fled, this way and that, pursued one by one to the death. But one band, holding together in a black wedge, drove forward resolutely in the direction of the forest. Straight up the slope they charged, towards the watchers. Now they were drawing near, and it seemed certain that they would escape. They'd already hewn down three riders that barred their way. "We've watched too long," said Merry. "There's Ugluk. I don't want to meet him again." The hobbits turned and fled deep into the shadows of the wood. So it was that they did not see the last stand when Ugluk was overtaken and brought to bay at the very edge of Fangorn. There he was slain at last by Eomer,